Music is a powerful influence. It affects us emotionally, physically, mentally, and as vibrations, it even moves us at a molecular level. Many writers employ music as a way of communicating emotion beyond words, or to encourage consistency in character, tone, or language. Music in fiction can create the mood of a time, like John Updike's Rabbit Run, set in the late 50s, or it can influence the structure of a novel, like James Joyce's Ulysses. Music's played a major role in British literature, with Charles Dickens, Jane Austen, George Eliot and Ian McEwan among the writers who've used music extensively in their work. Dr. Alan Dilnot is a senior lecturer in English at Monash University, and he specialises in 19th century fiction. He spoke with Fiona Kroll about the role of music in the novel.
It's one of the ways of reflecting the society and the audience that the novelist is writing for. Novelists don't, on the whole, talk about people who are not going to be reading their novels. So in the early part of the 19th century, we don't find many working class characters in 19th century novels because the audience are people who've had an education, who are able to afford to purchase books, and their cultural interests likewise are reflected in the novel. So we don't expect to find the kind of music that the working class might be listening to very much represented in the novel. It's more the sort of music that would be listened to in parlours and in drawing rooms, and the kind of instruments used are the ones that might be found in middle class or upper class families. Unless, of course, the novel changes its scene to a theatre or some public event, and then the music and the instruments playing the music will necessarily change. And it's not until the 20th century, when readership is much broader and when people at all levels of society may be expected to read fiction, that we get what we might call popular culture being referred to much more frequently in novels, and therefore popular music appearing much more frequently in novels.
So it's very much a comment, perhaps, on the class system, particularly in the British Victorian novels, and maybe taking Charles Dickens for an example there.
Yes, Dickens does appeal to a wider audience, at least the lower middle class, and perhaps occasionally he shows an interest in the working class. His music is likewise very accessible. That is, he deals in the sorts of songs that could be heard on the theatrical stage at the beginning of the 19th century and might become popular numbers. Usually the music that he refers to is in the form of song, and the songs have words, and the words are relevant to the issues that are being debated or looked at in the novels. He doesn't very frequently refer to what we would call nowadays high cultural music. He doesn't make much mention of Mozart or Beethoven or Haydn. He does have keen references to Handel, but it's usually just one piece of music by Handel, which is called the Harmonious Blacksmith, and he does make more than one reference to that, but particularly in Great Expectations. But usually when he makes a reference to music by Mozart or Beethoven, he comes a cropper, really, because, for example, in Dombey and Son, he refers to Beethoven's Sonata in B for the cello. Well, there's no such piece of music.
And but perhaps that's him being a bit cheeky. I mean, you know,
it may be, because it could be that he's having a quiet joke there. The main point there is that the cellist in question is a very agreeable, sympathetic character called Mr. Morfin, who is what you might call one of the good guys in the novel, and the fact that he plays the cello is a bit of a sign that he's a good guy, because he's playing consoling, dreaming, comforting music with a little bit of a romantic touch. Although Dickens gets the piece of music wrong, or at least he may be intentionally getting it wrong, still the message is coming across that Morfin is a good guy, and we know that he's a good guy partly because of his musical interests. And rather similarly, in Anthony Trollope's The Warden, the character Mr. Harding plays the cello. He's got deep musical interest, and the fact that he has these deep musical interests indicates that he's a more sensitive and even a more saintly figure than the other characters in the novel, who don't have nearly the same interest in music and certainly don't have anything like the same skill in music as Mr. Harding has. But as I say, Dickens is more interested in ballads and popular songs, stage songs, and quite a lot of his sympathetic characters have good voices and go in for singing. There is one exception to that, and a very interesting one, and that is in his very last novel, which is called The Mystery of Edwin Drood, and which he left unfinished. The person who appears to be being primed to be the villain, John Jasper, is the organist and choirmaster of a cathedral choir, and he seems to have very sinister powers, and he exercises some of those powers through his skill as a musician. He plays both the piano and the organ, and he's able to mesmerise and hypnotise people through the kind of music that he plays. That's a rather interesting development at the end of Dickens's career. And in that novel, Dickens does actually refer to some more serious or high cultural pieces of music. But generally speaking, in Dickens's career, if you play a musical instrument and you're enthusiastic about it and you do it to the best of your ability, that's a sign that you're a good person and you're contributing to the well-being of society.
So, in a way, when Dickens uses music, he is commenting on kind of the cultural experience of his world he's living in, but also
yes.
Music almost becomes a character in his books. What about another Victorian novelist, perhaps George Eliot? Does she tackle it from that perspective? Do her characters show that music, you know, was a central aspect to Victorian or to the Victorian experience?
Well, in her early work, especially in a little book called Silas Marner, the music there is the sort of music that really enthuses and deeply moves members of the rural community, and there's a wonderful Christmas scene in that book where the music is led by a very gifted fiddler, and he's going to play dance music for the people who are gathered at the squire's manor house. But by the time she comes to Daniel Deronda, which was her last novel and was written, I think, late in the 1870s, there the music that she's talking about is the preserve, really, of an elite. And she uses music in ways which enable us to place her characters usually unfavourably. I don't know whether you would like me to read a little passage from Daniel Deronda.
Please
in
do.
Which the music teacher, who's a German, Herr Klezmer, Klezmer itself is a kind of music, so he's being named almost allegorically, and he has been listening to the central character's performance as a singer. Gwendolyn Harleth has just sung a song, and she's been told by all her friends that she's got a really good voice and that she ought to be compared with the great singer Jenny Lind. But in fact, this is vanity on her part and self-deception, and Herr Klezmer makes some rather damaging comments about her performance. And having put her down, and this is what George Eliot says at one point, woman was dear to him, but music was dearer. Still, you're not quite without gifts. You sing in tune, and you have a pretty fair organ, but you produce your notes badly, and that music which you sing is beneath you. It is a form of melody which expresses a puerile state of culture. And he goes on in that vein, and so gives Gwendolyn a diminished view of her own abilities.
Just hearing you talk about music as a judgment of a woman's character or whether she's good enough to be a possible partner in George Eliot's work, it reminds me of, you know, the classic book High Fidelity by Nick Hornby, where his main character, Rob, the protagonist, he refers to popular music in order to mirror how he feels, I guess, about various relationships and potential women that he wants in his life. Do you think another contemporary author, perhaps Ian McEwan, also sets out to use music as analogies for relationship status?
Certainly he does, and he's very interested in both ways of using music that I've referred to so far. He uses music sometimes to place a character economically. So in the recent novel of his called Saturday, which is about a central character called Henry Perrone, who is a brain surgeon, He very quickly shows Perrone's intellectual standing by saying that when he's in the operating theatre, he likes to have CDs on playing, and the music that he likes tends to be Haydn and Bach, but particularly Bach. And we're even told which performers he likes. He favours Angela Hewitt, Marta Argerich, and sometimes Gustav Leonhardt. In a really good mood, he'll go for the looser interpretations of Glenn Gould. Now, I think that kind of reference wouldn't be understood unless you had a readership that was already fairly familiar with versions of Bach. But elsewhere in that novel, Henry's son, Theo, who is a jazz guitarist, plays some music. He plays in a band. And I'll just read the description of Theo playing. Something is swelling or lightening in him as Theo's notes rise, and on the second turnaround lift into a higher register and begin to soar. This is what the boys have been working on, and they want him to hear it, and he's touched. He's catching on to the idea, to the momentum of their exuberance and expertise. At the same time, he discovers that the song is not in the usual pattern of a 12-bar blues. There's a middle section with an unworldly melody that rises and falls in semitones. Chaz leans into his microphone to sing with Theo in a close, strange harmony. Baby, you can choose despair, or you can be happy if you dare. So let me take you there, my city square, city square. Then Chaz, with all his fresh tricks from New York, turns aside, lifts his sax, and comes in on a wild and ragged high note, like a voice cracking with joy that holds and holds, then tapers and drops away in a downward spiral, echoing Theo's intro, and delivers the band back into the 12-bar round. Chaz, too, goes three times round. Now, I think what McEwan is getting at there is the ability of music to communicate beyond words and to communicate understanding and sympathy and harmony and integration in a way that no other art form can, and even particularly the novel. So McEwan is acknowledging that beyond the novel, beyond the use of words, as a form of communication, there's another way in which people can be brought together. And I think McEwan does that in several of his novels, or he has that feeling about the possibilities of music. And it's interesting there that we've got a range from what you might call high cultural music across to popular or contemporary music.
I mean, he does have a broad range of music there, so in a way he's almost being a crowd pleaser across the age differences, perhaps, of his potential readership.
But I think so.
But it's an interesting question. Like, you touched on it there, but is there a risk of making too many assumptions about the popular music literacy
I think so.
Of an audience? Yes.
I think it's just as dangerous to assume that your audience is up with the latest in pop music as to assume that they are familiar with Monteverdi or Haydn. That's always a risk, isn't it? But it's a risk with any kind of cultural illusion.
Let's take a look at the crime writers of the world today. I mean, some of the authors that come to mind, you know, Scottish crime writers, Ian Rankin, Denise Minor, Christopher Brookmeyer, Peter Temple, of course. You know, there's so many music references, you know, from Tom Waits, The Go-Betweens, Franz Ferdinand. What is it? What is it with crime writers?
Interesting, when I was talking about Dickens, that the very novel in which he introduces crime, the crime of murder, is the one which has got the most musical reference in it. So it's perhaps accidental in that case, but there does seem to be a strong link between an interest in music and the development of a crime plot. I'm not absolutely sure why this is, but I think it's to get the frisson, really, between the seductive, consoling, reassuring sense that some music gives to us, and to confront that with the threat of violence and crime. It's as if you're putting two opposites together, so that the music, rather like when you go into a supermarket, the music is subduing you or making you receptive, and then in that receptive and perhaps vulnerable mood, you're able to be attacked by the grimness of the crime scenario. So I think that may be why crime writers in particular rather like to use music as a background or as a setting.
And finally, Alan?
Keep reading, keep listening.
Keep singing.
Keep singing, yes.
Fiona Kroll speaking with Dr. Alan Dilnot from Monash University in Melbourne about the role of music in fiction. This is The Book Show on ABC Radio National, abc.net.au/rn. I'm Peter Mayers.